So welcome to the Seed Coach Podcast. I'm Avtar Singh, your host, and we come to you with another brilliant episode and an excellent guest, one that I've been looking forward to meet for a couple of months, and I think our diaries have just been sort of mismatched, and certain events and certain circumstances at the moment have been made it difficult for us to do so. But I'd love to welcome to the Seed Coach Podcast, Harvir Singh. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have been looking forward to talking to you as well, but the events around the world and changes at work has made it a little difficult to get this thing recorded, but I'm happy we are here. And I really look forward to talking to you about whatever you want to talk about.
Awesome. Brilliant. Yeah. And I think, I guess it's one of those things that everyone's going through challenges. You know, we're getting over COVID and all sorts of stuff is happening. And now the Russia thing's kicked off. It just seems like, you know, there's one thing after another that's kind of just changing life for everybody at the moment. But yeah, really here. Excited to have you here. So I think it'd be good just to give a brief background to who is Harvir Singh to the audience.
Sure. I will start with what I do right now. I work for Western Union. And if people who do not know Western Union, I'm pretty sure everybody does, but still, we are one of the largest money transfer companies in the world. We have existed for about 170 years. We have serviced customers, more than a billion customers over the life of our relationship. So to think about it, every fifth or sixth person in the world has actually been a customer, either in terms of sending money or receiving money in some form. Yes. We exist in about 200 countries, 200 plus countries. And right now we are going through a massive transformation in how we perceive the digital money is going to become the digital gold in the future. So my role evolves around the engineering work that is happening. I'm the chief data architect here as well. And I run a few different parts of the organization, primarily around loyalty, advertising, marketing technology, as well as having and owning the entire customer data platform. So that's a bit about what I do right now. But prior to this, I have been with, you know, multiple consulting organizations. You know, the latest one was Ernst & Young in New York. And then prior to that, I was with Deloitte and IBM and Accenture. And overall, I spent about 16 years in consulting before I jumped ship into the corporate world. My journey for my professional journey started with Accenture in Australia. I was born in India in 1980. I just turned 40 last year, or 3 years ago, I guess. And my journey started in New Delhi. Unfortunately, had, you know, events in 1984 affect us, which forced us to move up to Punjab. I went to school in Amritsar. I did my engineering in Amritsar, schooling in Ludhiana. Given the family circumstances, the only way for me was to accelerate my growth in some way or some form to go to a Western world to, you know, the power of dollar or power of, you know, multiplication applied to get the family out of debt. Yes. And to do something good and better for the entire family in some way or some form. So I think about a forceful exodus, you know, out of India in 2002 into Australia, and started studying there. Went to school in University of Technology, Sydney, started teaching there. And then ended up in consulting with Accenture there, and then just traveled around the world, and, you know, finally making a pit stop in New York in 2008, and then traveling everywhere in the US and Europe through there, and now kind of jumping between Denver, Colorado, as well as Vancouver, Canada. My better half, she works for a TV station in Vancouver, Canada, so I spend about 2 to 3 weeks here in Vancouver, and then I go back to Denver, where my headquarters of Western Union is. I love a few things. I recently started, I just recently joined a gun club. So I'm super, super excited about it. It's always been something that I wanted to do. And I can tell the viewers that it was a very fascinating experience. I finally purchased my first Glock, and I'm super excited about it. Wow. Not because, you know, it's something that I want to show off, but it's something that it feels that it has been part of our culture in some way or some form. Arms have been part of our culture in some way or some forms, and rightfully so. The first time I held up you know, an AR-15 or an AK-47, the blood in my body was like boiling, and I'm like, wow, the immense power it comes with it and the responsibility that comes with it. So super excited about it. I can fly a plane, and I can actually, I'm a scuba certified, I'm a diver, certified diver as well. Wow. So for a few different things that I do, I have a 5-year-old son, and I'm hoping a few years down the line, he'll be hearing this podcast and be like, oh, wow, that's my dad. So I'm trying to become a role model in some form for him as well. Yeah. And I guess that's about me. I mean, I can go on and on, but, you know, happy to, you know, answer anything that part of my life that I missed.
Yeah, 100%. Wow, it's a lot. There's a lot going on there. And I think the reaction to that, which is, wow, you know, the career journey, the moving, you know, the education from India, the moving abroad, then going through those different roles. And then just, you know, the icing on the cake is around, you know, you partly managed to learn how to drive a plane and scuba drive as well. It's like, that is a lot of stuff you packed into those 40 years. So, you know, well done for that. And I think you've got you've got tick the role model mark for your son, for sure. He's going to have a lot to sort of look up to and sort of support wise as well.
You know, there are certain, you know, rationales behind some of this. You know, when I was in school, I wanted to be a fighter pilot. Mm-hmm. But then I looked at the debt that was sitting on the house. I'm like, okay, if I go down that path, I will never be able to take the family out of debt. But when I was comfortable, I'm like, okay, fine. I really want to fly a plane, you know, whether it be that or that, let's go do this, right? That's how it kind of came about. By, you know, owning a weapon was primarily because, you know, when you were in the army or when you were in the Air Force or something, it comes with the pride of holding one. So I'm like, okay, when I'm able to do it, I will. So it's like almost at every step of my life, I'm like, okay, what did I miss that I could not do because of all the things that had happened in the past? Yeah. Can I do this now? Can I enable this for my family? Can I enable this for my son? Can I enable this for others as well? You know, I have a big set of people. Interestingly enough, in the last 2 years, I have a big set of followers that have started following me on Instagram as well as on Twitter and LinkedIn. So I almost feel like, you know, I have this responsibility to try and educate others or try to bring them along the journey. If I can do anything for them, I'd love to do it as well.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's the one thing that we can do is inspire others, but also that the premise of this podcast was exactly that, to learn from others who've been through difficulty in life and going through certain paths, but inspire other people to believe in their dreams, that it's never too late to go back and do something that people may have thought would missed out because of certain circumstances or age or anything like that. So yeah, so perfect. You know, I love having guests like you on the show because it's just inspiring and beyond, like, just the technology space is your career space, but you bring so much more depth into the wider space. So I think what would be really good is to talk about, you know, you mentioned being born in the 80s, so we're quite similar ages, but, you know, I've kind of been born and brought up in London, in the UK. You're born into this turbulent time in India where, you know, you've had, you know, since, like, you know, your age of 4 or 5, you've had to survive life or death situation. How you know, what memories do you have of that, and how has that impacted the way your life?
Yeah, so there are troubled past and troubled memories, right? When I was 4 in 84, in November 84, my faintest memory is being followed by a bunch of people trying to get to kill us because we were in New Delhi. It was a holiday. My dad used to work in a factory. It was a holiday. We had gone to some relative's house. I clearly remember we used to live in Arkipuram. My grandfather was in the civil defense at that point of time. So he was in a government housing. And one of my grandfather's sisters, her husband used to work in the post office, and they were in a different government complex in Vasant Kunj. So I clearly remember that night when we were coming back, we got off the bus, and then suddenly a mob just turned around and looked at us like, you know, these are six, let's get rid of them. And then we had people follow us. So interestingly enough, we knew the, you know, back doors, back entries, any alleyways, etc.
Yeah.
Made our way back to our home, and then, you know, our because of the government housing, we had a lot of people who were, like, you know, domestic help that were living behind our You know, the back alleys, they were very helpful. They helped us get into the house. We were locked for 7 days, I remember. And then my aunt upstairs, not aunt, but there was neighbors upstairs. You know, they were not Sikhs, but, you know, generally nice people. They came down and, at least for me, that what they did was, you know, opened up my hair and made me a girl and took them outside, because I would not, I wanted to go out, right? As a four-year-old, how do you keep a four-year-old in the house? Yes. And quiet. That's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. And every night there was a mob to stand outside our house and try to burn it down. But then the neighbors would come and protect it because it was government housing. They're not just Sikhs living, there are other people living. So we kind of got lucky there. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, my parents decided that this is not the, you know, right thing for us. We had to leave. We left everything behind and we went to Punjab. And that left a very big impact to me that, look, you know, if you have the means and resources, you can get out. But if you don't have the means and resources, then you become a common person. And the common person is the only one that gets suffered. Regardless of the situation, if you look around, it's the common people that get suffered. So one of the deepest impact it left on me as personally was, how do I become uncommon? How do I have the means to protect myself, my family, my friends, and anyone who I should be able to? I cannot protect everyone, but how do I become that common, uncommon? It's funny enough, you know, I was just sitting today and I read this one tweet that, you know, the internet in Russia and in Ukraine went down and Elon Musk literally sent internet to them.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
What a, even pardon my language, that is amazing.
That is.
You know, how do I become that enabler for others? But I have to enable myself first, right? Without myself enabling myself, I cannot enable others. And that has left a very deep impact on me, is that I do not want to be a common person that will get harassed and that will get pushed around. If there is this kind of circumstance, and this can happen to anyone, anytime, anywhere, and it keeps happening in a country like that.
Yes.
So today I have the means to, you know, lift up the phone. And again, this is a good example. COVID hit. The COVID was, my parents are on the elderly side. They're close to 70 now. And my sister is here in the US, she lives in New Jersey, but they're the only two people that are left behind as a family, right?
Yes.
And we're always scared about the parents, right? And March, they were gonna do a lockdown. On 24th of March, I remember 2020, they were gonna do a lockdown. And I picked up a phone and called my parents. I said, you are getting on the next flight out. And they're like, how much is it? I said, I don't care.
Yeah.
In my mind, that is what enablement has done for me, is being able to literally do something. Sure, this was parents, you know, you don't think twice, but I didn't even think. Forget about thinking twice. I didn't even think. It's that necessary means that I've been able to do is what those memories have caused me.
Yeah. So seeing that at such a young age, and 100%, I think it's I guess it's the bit of an ethos in the Sikh faith as well, is to do beyond just your own needs, that you live for a purpose, and not just your own purpose, but for to be able to do something for other people, whether it's just your family or your friends or your network. That's still beyond just the selfish needs, isn't it? But that's so inspiring. It's so profound. Like, it's the
self-enablement is actually embedded in our DNA, you know, whether it's, if you look at, you know, the gurus teaching us, you know, being able to keep fit, or, you know, being able to take up arms. It's primarily not to just for us.
Yes.
If it's for everyone else around you, right? And that enablement has stuck very deep in mind. If I cannot enable myself, I cannot help anyone that's failed, because my first thing would be to protect myself. My first instance would be to take care of myself. I've done that. Now I want to do everything else for others. I mean, I know philosophically, you know, people might think that it's others beyond self, but think about it. When Guru Amar Das Ji started Langar, right? The first thing he said is, go sit and satisfy your hunger.
Hmm.
And then come inside and let's have a dialogue. Because the first thing you'll always do is think about food.
Yeah.
So if that is your basic necessity, you've taken care of that. Now let's talk, right? Because that thing is taken care of. So it's embedded. That selfishness is embedded. I mean, it's not selfish, but that's embedded in your DNA.
Is that the analogy a lot of people use, is being on an aeroplane, and as soon as something bad happens, the masks come down, they say, put your mask on first, because
yeah.
You are useless to everybody else.
Absolutely.
Your priority is you. then help everybody else.
Absolutely.
It's amazing, brilliant. So that, I guess that gives you the core principles of, you know, how to really sing and the experience in the early childhood. And I guess some of the trajectory we can now figure out, you know, what the steps you did. So were your family from an educated background? Was engineering something you naturally inclined to sort of went into? How did you know engineering is for me, or was it just sort of something that happened?
Every question you're asking me, you're going to get a very interesting answer, because my life has not been very simple. It comes with like if else statement, because I have a plan, then I have a backup plan, I have a backup plan, and then if everything else fails,
This then
it's
that,
like,
if this then
yeah.
that.
And since it's a podcast, I'm happy to share. My mom lost her father when she was 10 years old. She was in Nauset. She was like 15 years old, and she had two younger sisters and two elder brothers, and the entire family just, broke apart. She wanted to be a doctor, and she was the best in her class, but just could not afford the education, so had to give up. My dad, grew up in an environment where, even though my grandfather was very, very well educated, he had his own issues with, different issues in his life, which ended up my father spending more time with his grandparents. And, they are from a traditional, pin background. They didn't know what to do, right, et cetera. And my father became a glorified houseboy, if you will. So he never really picked up anything. So my uncle had a factory. His uncle had a factory, so he would just go to the factory and start to do that. So they were, my mom was, not like highly educated. My mom was educated. My dad, if you think about it, in India, they're like, he was like in the 10th, 12th kind of the scenario, right? But genuinely hardworking people, phenomenal principles that they put us first. Absolutely. They were like, there's nothing that they did not do for me. They suffered through many, many years of hardship just to give us the good education in some way or some form. My initial always wanted to be, I wanted to be a pilot. That was my first thing, right? And then that didn't work out because, the family had a debt. And then, commercial was very expensive, At that point of time, even if it was $10,000, there's just no way I could afford it. So that first if statement out of the door. The second was I want to go to Merchant Navy, and my uncle was in the Merchant Navy. I was super excited. I went and learned how to swim. I wanted to go to Merchant Navy, but then it was like, do I want to be in the sea for the rest of my life, right? Okay, that didn't work out. And then the final statement was, okay, since I know math, and since I'm good at math and I'm good at physics, what comes next? It's let's do computer science, right? So it was one of the things that was, everybody was talking about Y2K at that point of time. Anybody with some kind of computer engineering can get a job in the US. And I was like, if I can make $60,000 a year, $50,000 a year, that's it. That's all I wanted, right? It was like my scope was so narrow that in the next 5 years would give me financial freedom for my family. That's all I cared about. So if that two if statements failed, then the next one was, let's go back to school, let's go back to computer science. But I actually enjoyed it. I was always good with computers in school, and so the de facto was not a compromise, but it was something that I actually enjoyed.
Yes.
But it grounded me, to not to be in the air or in the sea, but it grounded me in some way or some form. And I don't know if it's good or bad, but my parents were happy that I did not join, Merchant Navy, and I was in the sea all the time. Nothing wrong with that, but that's how it is. So that kind of pushed me in that path. But when I went to school, the one thing I realized was the school education system is super broken in India. Unless you're going to one of those top universities. Again, to go to the top universities, you're spending hundreds and thousands of,
It's a lot.
money even to get to the university or just do the training program. The education system is just broken. They don't look at your intellectual level. They look at how well you prepared for an exam. It's not about the
Application.
application. Yeah, it's not the application. It's about I am able to write the exam. So, anyways, I always worked. I took up multiple jobs when I was in school, in university. I'm super proud. I paid for my own education pretty much most through my entire bachelor's in India. Again, half the people were like, really? That's unheard of. I'm like, but that was the need of the hour. I just didn't have the guts to go to my dad and say, I need, you know, 5,000 rupees or 10,000 rupees because I have to pay the fee. Yeah. So I have to make those means, right? That's kind of pushed me into the engineering or the computer science path. And then I just enjoyed the logic that comes with it. You know, my brain always works with logic. So that kind of logic was what I was putting in practice. Yes. I started building websites when I was like, you know, in my second year of engineering. That got me excited. New technology got me excited. You know, anything that was coming up new, I would just grasp it, try to implement it. And that's how I got into that.
Wow. Awesome. So yeah, well, it's really impressive. Like, you self-funded your education effectively, and yeah, well done for that. So was this traditional engineering? Was it always computer software engineering?
It was computer science and engineering. So there were the hardware components that I did was around, you know, infrastructure and hardware, and you know, some parts of that was electronic engineering, but it was not like mechanical or stuff. It was more in the electronic and computer science space.
Ah, brilliant. Okay, cool. So what then, so was it the education system that made you move to the Western, sort of the Australia, the move to Australia and do the education there?
See, yeah, so two things, right? One was when I was graduating, you know, they have this thing called a campus interview in India. Now, the campus interview is when I looked at the compensation that they were providing to these, you know, young graduates, and I looked at myself, I'm like, this way I will never be out of debt.
Yes.
Now work my ass off, but I'll never be out of debt. So the first thing that came to mind was explore opportunities in the US and, you know, other countries. US being US, you know, 9/11 happened, things got tougher, was very difficult to come out here. And UK was one of the options, but then UK was, people were struggling primarily because my intention was not to study. My intention was, what is the after? What comes after, which is the monetary, you know, application of that and basically make money. Yes. Australia presented a great option. I have my uncle who got settled in Australia. He kind of encouraged me and said, you know, why don't you come and have a look at the education system there? I applied, I got through. You know, again, that Australian education system is not something that, you know, you have to struggle for. You apply to a university, they look at your, you know, university scores, and they, you know, happy to provide you an admission. I got admitted there. My goal was that in a country where, when you come from India to a Western world, one of the things to excel in any other country is to learn the education system. It's not about, they didn't teach me anything new. They taught me how to think, right? Because the classes were so different. You know, the first year when I was there, it was all about application. It was all about writing papers. It's all about, you know, taking something that I've learned and actually applying it.
Yes.
That kind of was very, very happy, and I was excited about it. But then, you know, because I was doing this in school without anybody telling me, it was very, very, you know, I was very happy about it.
Yes.
And then the idea was that right out of there, the campus placement there would get me 50x what I was making in India.
Yes.
It just, you know, it was a very selfish move, but that was self-enablement. I had to do it. There was no other choice for me.
Yeah. So then was the ultimate aim to sort of go into the US, the space, and well,
there was never an ultimate goal. The goal was to do something and to make a difference and excel. I did some fun projects when I was there in Australia. So my first I started teaching, and it came out very funny because the course that I really excelled in, the professor called me out of nowhere and he's like, you did really well. I want to meet you. And I'm like, sure, let's have a chat. And he's like, are you interested to take my lessons? Because he's like, I'm just too busy with research. You know, I'd be happy to pay you. And I was like, well, this is that was easy. So I got into education, started teaching there. And then alongside, because teaching, it was still a side job for me. Mm-hmm. I actually wanted to get into like the profession in terms of, you know, getting into a product company or a services consulting company. I applied a bunch of places. Accenture was one of the companies that, you know, hired me there. And I started working on projects. So I ended up working on some interesting project. I did one of the largest projects in Australia around the tax modernization. Again, it was not just me, there was hundreds of people there, but, you know, I was blown away by the amazing work that the company provided there. It was my first exposure to working in those large corporations, if you will. Provided me a very good foundation. You know, my boss, I still remember, gave me some really, really good opportunity. I thought it was a great company to start your career with. And then it provided me international travel. You know, 6 months down, I was in Malaysia doing a course. And then, you know, next thing you knew, I was on a flight to Singapore, working on a Singapore Airlines project. And then, you know, to Hong Kong, back in Malaysia. And then one fine day, there was a request come out for one of the persons who knows. There was a software called Data Stage. I don't know, you know, maybe irrelevant for the conversation, but it was a company that IBM bought, and they didn't have enough subject matter experts around the world who've actually done some really hardcore engineering work in that space. So they were like, the Accenture US called out to the rest of the world and say, we're looking for people who have done this. Yes. And, you know, my mentor who was there in Australia proposed by name, and I was on a plane to New York, and I'm like, landing in New York, I'm like, oh, this is interesting. did New York to Sydney travel for almost 8 months, completely exhausted myself. Along the journey, I kind of met my wife in India. She and I dated for a while, and then we decided to get married because the cell phone bills were too expensive for a relationship. The next best thing we could do was get married. And then I ended up being in the US. I asked for a transfer here. I thought the work here that we do was much more cutting edge. The opportunity for me as a voice in the world will become more, it'll become more prevalent. Whereas Australia was a much smaller market. Again, you know, it's a great country. Australia is a fantastic country to live. Great weather, everything. But I think the general opportunity here in the US was amazing. That kind of made me stay. Not that I did not really take, for the first, you know, 8 years, I really didn't take too much advantage around it, because I got stuck into the, you know, got into the comfort zone. But now that I'm out of a comfort zone, I think that's a great opportunity that still lies ahead. And that's why I ended up here. Again, it's not like this is the end all, stay all. You know, I would love to go back to Chandigarh. That's what my wife says. Let's go back to Chandigarh, find a house by the lake and sit there and enjoy a cup of tea in the evening. I'm a coffee drinker, but she likes cup tea. Yeah. I'd love to do that and just, you know, relax and retire. My ultimate goal is to find a beach house and, you know, just cook in the evenings and have people come and eat. I love doing that. But yes, for now, this is where we are. This is where we intend to stay for the next few years. You know, unless an opportunity gets me to a place where I really feel my voice is heard. Right now, my voice is heard here. I'm making a difference. People respect me. The community here has accepted, even the tech community has been accepted for me quite interestingly. Yesterday itself, I got invited to MIT to speak around a topic around AI and machine learning, which I thought was extremely interesting. One of the startups I work with at Western Union, they came out of MIT. Now, going back and teaching MIT people on how to do AI, I think this is fascinating. Because that was one of the dreams, to get into one of those schools, but I could not, or it was too expensive. But on the flip side, now I'm going down the path to give a chat to to the people there, which is going to be very interesting as well.
Wow, it's amazing. So it's one of those things like the you know, learning how to ride an airplane. Now you're going back to MIT, but in different guise, but actually as an expert.
And there are two other boxes that I need to check, right? I wanted to be on a cover page of a magazine. Again, these are so selfish and stupid things. I was on a cover page of Digital Bulletin last year. I'm going to be on the cover page, you know, again, a spoiler alert. I'm on the cover page of FinTech Magazine in April with the launch of our digital bank in Europe. I was able to, with my leadership team as well as my team, We were able to launch a bank in 9 months from scratch. We built the entire bank from scratch in 9 months. And that's, you know, it's unheard of. I know the fintech community is completely rattled and they're like, how did you do it? And that's what I'm going to discuss in the Fintech Magazine interview next month.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I saw some of those covers. They're amazing. So yeah, well done for taking that off. But I guess you've got to have these sort of visions to make them happen in the first place. Like, you know, even though, you know, you may think, oh yeah, it's selfish or whatever, but actually just achieving them just proves that if you didn't think about it, you wouldn't have got there. But so I think it's an amazing educational journey, and you know, coming from India to Oz, and then Oz, then the journey to the US, and the current role, like it's a big title. How do you manage? You know, it's, you know, the chief data architect and the global head of engineering. That must be a lot of projects, a lot of things. You mentioned right at starting, sort of your responsibilities around marketing and sales, and now you're kind of talking about being in charge of it, startups and starting a new bank within 9 months and stuff. You know, how do you manage that? Do you have like a massive team below you? How does it work? And is it quite agile, like in the things you get involved in?
We are quite agile. And the one thing I would say is that I was fortunate enough to be able to pick my own team. So this role was created to accelerate the Western Union's journey to the cloud. And interestingly enough, the person that I work for, he was my client for 10 years. And one day out of nowhere, he calls me and he's like, are you done with your consulting days? Are you tired of traveling? And I was like, yeah, maybe, because I want to spend more time with home. And here I am traveling again. Again, let's not get into that one. But and he's like, I have a great opportunity for you. And we're going to build a bank and we're going to, you know, move to the cloud, a company which is 170 year old. Let's bring those old consulting days back, get on your feet and come and help me do this. And I was like, well, what's my role? He's like, well, we'll figure it out when you get here. I love those kind of conversations because I had no idea what I was getting in, but I knew the person, you know, hats off to him. He trusting me to bring him on. And, you know, honestly, I trusted him. Yes. Extremely satisfied, extremely happy with where we are and what we have done, accomplished. But then he gave me the opportunity to say, okay, go hire your own team. You know, here's the bunch of people that are available to you, but then these are new positions that you can open. If you don't find anyone who is doing you know, what they need to be doing, let's figure out a way to either, you know, reskill them, you know, or find them other opportunities, because this is, for us, this is the most important thing as a company, that this is the direction we want to. And if folks are not aligning to that, you know, there are only two ways to do it. Either you rally behind the leadership and say, this is what we will do as an organization. Otherwise, you know, hey, there are other opportunities around the world, you know, we'll help you, we'll support you for the next 6, 12 months. And we were very vocal about it. So I ended up picking a team of, interestingly, some of my previous employees that I, I had, they had worked for me. Yes. And funny enough, I actually brought in some of my clients that I used to work for, okay, which was very interesting because that mindset matched really well. Mm-hmm. And I had two things to tell them. I said, look, it's an opportunity of a lifetime for you. And you have to show them that path. It's an opportunity of a lifetime for you. You're coming in and building a bank. How many times in your lifetime, or in your friends or family, you can say you build a bank from scratch? I haven't. You know, you did a part of the work, yes, because these have existed. But this is the first time, you know, this is what is being presented to you. You know, you will be the end-to-end. We will build this together and we will stand on it when it is launched, that we did this in the last. So I think showing them the journey, bringing them along the journey, and then, you know, having the right mix of those people has enabled me to take on more work, you know. And my goal is to never micromanage. I never micromanage my team. What I tell them is that I am enabling you to make decisions. You will be wrong at times, yes, and we'll figure it out, and we'll figure out how to correct them. But do not be afraid to make a decision just because you think it's going to be wrong. How else would you learn? That has resonated really well with the team. One of the key differentiators between my team and the rest of the teams that are exist there, and we were recognized this year, you know. And the way we were recognized is, you know, the retention bonuses and the stuff that was provided to us, primarily because they realize how effective we are. And the way we are effective is I am pushing the leadership down. My last person needs to be a leader as well to the other contractors or other vendors, or they need to be able to see them as a leader. And it goes like that. I'm asking everyone to be that leader, everyone to make that assessment and take a decision. Come to me if you're stuck, sure, but that should not be the norm. Take a decision, figure a way out of it, and then let's decide how you did. And then, you know, just let's repeat the cycle. Let's make sure that we keep improving and improving. That has really worked well with my team. And that itself allows me to do much, much more. And honestly, you know, I wouldn't be doing this podcast if, you know, it's a Wednesday, it's a Monday, and I'm doing a podcast with you. You know, right after this call, I'm going to switch back into and then have a status meeting and figure out what happened. But I have my team really working and supporting me because I do the same thing for them as well.
Yeah, 100%. One of my questions was going to be later on, what is your leadership style? But you've explained it really, really well there. I think it's, do you find this leadership style resonates with other people as well? Do you see other people doing this more in your network or in the organization, or other people you've seen as leaders? Because typically, you know, at one stage, there was a lot of micromanagement, distrust in your teams, and wanted to be a control freak. But almost like the way that the world is now, people are more understanding that everybody makes mistakes. But part of the innovation process, the figuring out things, is through failing. Well, not really failing, is to making those mistakes, but learning from them and then coming up with different solutions. But having enough confidence that you're able to tell when you've made a mistake, like the atmosphere, the environment needs to be supportive, that it's not, you're not going to tell them off and say, right, you're fired, but actually let's see what happened and what solutions can come from it and what we learn from it.
Yeah, so I would say the difference between a person who ends up being successful and who's fired to being successful is that leadership style. If you do not know the lowest denominator in your team, then you failed already. I'm not saying that you need to know every person and their names and the children and everything else, but they need to see you as a leader. They need to accept you as a leader. Yes. This is, again, goes back to how our religion has evolved.
Yeah.
You know, when Guru Gobind Singh Ji was passing on the baton, the first thing that he picked the people and made them leaders and then made everyone the leader,
yeah,
right? So it was not like, I'm not the only one that exists. I want to impart the same thing. I'm the same as you. You're the same as the next one. That is the lead by example. So I think, you know, comparison to any guru is wrong anyways. I never justify that. But learning from his style, it's that you lead by example and then build the others as leaders who can then take on that baton and, you know, have their organization do the same. So it's like, you know, you need to push that down in some way or some form. I'm not looking for people to come to me and tell me every day what they're doing. I don't care. You know, at the end of the day, we have an objective that we need to achieve. Our objective is this. This is our North Star. How close we get to will define our success.
Exactly. And it is like, you build relationships and they pay back dividends. You trust people, you take their problems and you do something about it. And you'll find, I found anyway, when I've had teams under me in previous roles, you invest in their relationship, you understand what triggers them, what drives them, and you align their, you know, their role opportunities to that. And when they come to you with problems, you do something about it, and then they get the trust and then they replicate it. And you find other people will come to you to tell people to go talk to other people because you hold a stronger relationship with wider networks. And I think that's one thing I learned is, like, you sound like you've created a really strong network of people that you've created connections with at each place and organization you've led on. That's why you've been able to lean on them and reach out to them to build this team. So I think that's really important. Like people say, don't burn your bridges, you know, remember everybody has a place in the network and keep connections and keep them alive, because you don't know you're going to need people and when people are going to reach out to you. It kind of works. The world works in a serious way.
I also want to emphasize the authenticity. You can only fake it for a certain period of time.
Yeah.
If you're authentic, It will show in your network how the network will respond to things. You will see that.
Yeah, and you don't have to. It's naturally. You don't have to expend energy being authentic because it is you. Brilliant. So I think it'd be really good to talk about the tech world. Like, you know, Western Union is in, you know, the money transfer business. You've created this bank and the fintech, competitive fintech industry. You got cryptocurrencies. You got all of these things in the mix, which is changing the way people want to do things. I mean, obviously, some things are quite speculative at the moment and still becoming what they're going to become. But how do you see, you know, what's impacting? What do you think is going to be the big driving forces in the way people want things done now, and technology changing, you know, into the cloud and everything becoming so embedded in, you know, our smartphones and life day to day?
So I think COVID changed us quite a bit as well, right? Yes, the cryptocurrencies were obviously started in like the crux of this whole thing started like in a few years ago, but then it crashed. Primarily because people didn't know how to use it, or they didn't really trust the system itself, and they don't know how to build a use case around it. I think the biggest challenge that we are facing is we need to get out of this thing called FOMO, fear of missing out, which is what, you know, sometimes drives these prices high or low or whatever. You will always realize that the common people is the one that is getting affected. Mm. You know, people who buy crypto, you know, I'm not a wealth management advisor or anything. You know, obviously put the money that you feel that you are willing to lose in any kind of investment, regardless whether it's crypto or stock or startup or whatever, right? It's always at risk. Everything is at risk. But the reason, one of the reasons that people are not, I feel that people do not understand why they should be using and investing. And they need to be educated more on this, and there have to be use cases that have to be built on it. You know, if you're purely doing it from an investment perspective to make sure that you can, you know, you can swing it, then, you know, people are trading, they are making money. It doesn't matter if the thing goes up and down, they'll always make money in some way. The swings will make money. Exactly. But are you that person? I am not. I am not, because I don't want to sit in the morning and, you know, think through, oh shit, I lost some money today. Oh, I made from some. That's not what I do. What I personally do on my side is I'm looking at how do I build an ecosystem that supports this kind of technology, which is blockchain, as well as take something from that blockchain to support my use cases, you know. Creating a universal ID or creating a universal payment, you know, a settlement layer across the globe, which could potentially be very interesting, you know, having the use cases around authenticity of craftsmanship, or, you know, people who are in the creative art space. I think it's a very, very interesting, but, you know, I have not been able to figure out why should I buy an ape image, which cost, you know, $150,000. But I guess I figured out there was a party that was thrown yesterday with a lot of interesting stuff that probably not appropriate for this particular podcast. That's probably why people want it, right? So, you know, and I also feel that right now there is a lot of, I personally feel that there's a lot of money laundering also happening in that space. Primarily because there is no checks and balances. But once it's a regulated entity, the blockchain itself is extremely powerful to be brought into the world, which will remove a lot of hurdles and makes things speed up to the market. But it also has other implications, like Bitcoin has a lot of implications, especially around, you know, because it uses a lot of energy. So it's actually putting a lot of pressure on our, you know, environment in some way or some form. So I think we need to find better ways to make it work for the people in some way. I thought in my mind, the farmer protest in India gave a very good opportunity for us as to start talking about how do we make technology available to those folks with some kind of a DeFi lending or micro lending, which can potentially get them out of the struggle that they have with banks and stuff. But we did not. We instead wasted our time and, you know, this flag needs to be raised here and this needs to be done there, and et cetera, et cetera. I think that was a missed opportunity in my mind. But I think I'm open for people who want to collaborate. Again, you know, you're through this channel, I definitely want to talk about collaboration. If people want to collaborate and build something which goes direct to our farmers, for example, in India,
yes.
You know, especially our Punjabi community who's struggling, I'll be more than happy to willing to sponsor some of that stuff as well as participate in and build it out. And then we can hand it over to people. And that's what the blockchain technology is. It doesn't need me, it doesn't need you. Yeah. It can be managed by independently managed, which will remove that middleman in some way or some form. And that's what the government does not want, right? So I think we should look for opportunities like that. Whenever every chaos brings an opportunity, Ukraine chaos has brought in a very interesting opportunity. The economy has, you know, repercussions, but you know, if the crypto was holding value, it could be transferred anywhere and any hour. So every chaos will give you some opportunity, but we need to figure out how to use it for the people. Mm. Right now, what happens is we look at that opportunity, a few of us will make money and then just disappear. And that's happened a lot, right? Not that, you know, I mean, I'm not accusing anyone, but you know, what I feel is people who wanted to make money did make money out of this farmer protest in India as well. Yeah. Well, as the people who didn't get anything out of it. Yes, the laws were taken back, etc. Did their lives improve? No. They've gone back to their own lives, right? What did the community we did to actually make their lives better? Nothing. So I think that dialogue needs to start happening is what is to prevent that thing from happening again? That dialogue needs to happen right now.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I just, you know, I'm a big, big fan of Ravi Singh in the UK. He does a really great work with Khalsa Aid and stuff. He posted on Twitter yesterday that there is someone who's minting a Khalsa coin in his name.
And I saw that as well, yeah.
It's going to happen, right? This kind of stuff
is going to happen. There'll be NFTs and stuff.
Exactly.
But I think that's an amazing offer there. And I think this is like, you know, the concept of Silva. We've limited it to very, very small options, feeding people, clothing people, doing the basics. But Silva can be, right, how do we get, you know, microloans? How do we get payment systems to people directly on the ground? Like, you know, I've worked in the charity sector for 7-8 years for large charities in the UK. And I was reading about blockchain a couple of years ago, and they were like, actually, you might not need charities no more, because if the blockchain is giving it to the people directly and they can actually audit and check that they received it and they're spending and where they're spending, because the blockchain allows you to have technologies to give it direct and have that audit trail, why would you want an inefficient model that's got 40-50% operational costs being wasted from the money that's been raised when that could be going directly to the people that need it? So, you know, we as Sikhs could see it as an opportunity to help the farmers in this instance, but yeah. The same model could be given to the world,
anywhere,
every farmer in the whole world, and we would be at the forefront of doing Seva on an international level in a whole different way. And when you look at it that way, there's so many opportunities out there using the digital world, and
I'm fully. I cannot do it alone. I can only ask common. Or I can only ask like-minded people to start thinking about it. I'll be happy to sponsor part of it. But then, you know, I think I have folks that who are interested in it. Again, through your channel, you know, happy to collaborate. If you get a request from anyone who wants to collaborate, send them my way. I'll be more than happy to, you know, have a chat. I feel we need to do this for the next generation. Otherwise, you know, the technology that has been given to us is going to go to waste.
Yes.
Let's use it and let's figure out a way to, you know, make it work for us.
Hmm. Yeah, 100%. So yeah, we'll put out an ask there to all of those people who think they have an amazing idea or the skills and the software, or, you know, there's a lot of people out there that want to do these things, but just like you said, it's not one person that can do it. It needs to be a collaborative effort that we come together and do this as seeing the bigger picture, I think it is the key thing. Awesome. So how do you think other technologies are going to impact? Like, what are your interests in? Like, do you look at other things like metaverse and sort of the virtual world? Like, you know, one of the concepts I thought of, right? And I'm probably sure a couple of people thinking of, like, metaverse in certain ways, people creating their land stuff. But imagine like a gurdwara in the metaverse, you know, sangha in the metaverse. That we haven't even thought about that concept as a society, but other people, religious people, will be doing the same thing.
It's already done. The first church was already congregated in Metaverse
Yeah,
two weeks ago.
exactly. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So we could have done that first. Oh, yeah.
What is preventing us to have a virtual experience of Darbar Sahib sitting here for our parents who cannot go? Again, it's a very, very amazing piece of technology that has been provided. And let's start talking about it again. I'm doing something in this space. Again, I'm not necessarily disclosing at this point of time. It's too premature, but I am experimenting with the space. Funny enough, I had a very interesting call with Facebook the other day. We might be experimenting with our brand as well, on the metaverse space. But again, it's more from a Western Union perspective because a lot of companies are putting up their brands. But I think just the sheer way our community is, it is one thing that will bring us together. We've always talked about this concept of Khalistan, right? The Khalistan, the concept always had been, at least in my mind, has been a land of pure. It's got nothing to do with a piece of land, or it's not nothing to, in my mind, it does, it's not like land, it's a concept, it's the mindset. If we can bring that mindset together in this metaverse space, there is no stopping. We can have our own space and have our own conversations and our own dialogues about our own community, our own community's problems without interference, right? My wife is actually working on a kids initiative where she wants kids to learn Punjabi. And I know a lot of people who've settled abroad, Sikhs, always say that, oh, Punjabi is just a language. It's not a language, it's a connection, right? It's a connection to our roots, right? No matter where we go, if you want your kids to be connected to something back, it has to be there. Now you can always, always disconnect them from the land, but then you'll be disconnected from the culture as well. They'll be disconnected from the language as well. If the language dies, the people die. That's a hard reality. So she's working on something in that space. And I was like, I was asking her, I'm like, maybe we start classes around, sessions in Metaverse in some way or some form where kids can attend anywhere in the world. I've come across people in Wyoming where this one Sikh family is sitting and they're like, they have no access to a Gurdwara. They have no access to, let's say, a class. Their kids could be joining through the Metaverse. For us, I think as a Sikh community, it's one of the best things that have been provided. We just need to take advantage of it because we are so distributed around the world.
Yeah, and I think it's like it's another way to, and a lot of people, oh no, technology, see it in a bit of a negative way, but there's so many positive things you can do with it, and if that's going to bring
Negative
people together.
has to be balanced out regardless, right? What everything is a negative in some way or some form. I again, this is a very interesting concept around, Gurbani says that anything that makes you dependent on it is not good, whether it be coffee, be it alcohol, be it anything. Dependence on anything is bad, right? So it's the same thing. If you are truly dependent on it, then there's a problem. But if you use it and use it to advance yourself, your community, make a better place for your family, why not?
Their enabler. That's
Yep.
it. If you see it as that. And it'd be such an amazing collaborative space, in that sense, that probably bring people together rather than divide them. We've had enough. We're not, there's not many of us, but we still seem to divide ourselves in categories and all that stuff. But we need something
Human
that kind of fundamental.
need to take precedence, right? We're all alpha males, right? Alpha male.
Awesome. So one of the things I usually ask my guests on the podcast is, what sort of advice would you give to people who want to get into your industry around technology, fintech, and that space in general? What are the life lessons and what are the sort of tips you would give them?
Sure. One of the things that I want to tell everyone who's listening, again, this is not very specific to students or it's for everyone who's listening. Education is actually free. Schools and colleges are not, but education is free. You have, you can, anyone with a phone today, with some internet, can actually learn whatever they want to learn. The internet is full of education. There are people who are willing to collaborate. There are free courses available. There is so much that is available. If you're interested in something, it's absolutely available. So there should be no excuse that something is not available to you. So take that out of mind first. The second thing is, there is no age to do anything. Age is not a number. Age has nothing to do with your ability to do something. You know, and again, I will draw this inspiration from our, you know, the 10 gurus that we had. We had a guru which was, you know, 5 years old to a guru which was 80 plus years old. And there was a reason why they did that. I'm pretty sure there was a reason why they showed that was a life lesson. You can be a guru when you are like so young, but you can also be a guru when you are so at that age. So again, what's stopping you from starting something new or starting doing something fresh? Again, don't worry about age, you know. We have a marathon runner in the UK, Foja Singh. I met him in person. He actually started running when he was 89 years old. And the first thing he met me when he says, and he told me, he's like, "You're fat." I'm like, "Yes, I am."
You know,
I loved his enthusiasm. He's like, "Cut, khaya kar." I'm like, "Yes, sir, absolutely. You're right."
So where I used to live in East London, he used to be local, used to live locally.
What a phenomenal person.
Come rain, come shine, anything. Yeah. He'll be just giving some wisdom to everybody. Amazing guy.
Then the third thing, drawing from his, is consistency. Yeah. You need to be consistent. If you've decided to do something, don't let a small hiccup or a small failure stop you. Be consistent, you know, show up every day. I need to remind myself, like I was telling you earlier, that I fell through some, from my perspective at some point, right? That I need to be consistent as well. I remind myself every day, you know, I need to be consistent. I am consistent in a few ways, but I'm not consistent in certain other ways, which, you know, as a learning, I need to improve and constantly improve in myself. The fourth thing that I think is important for everyone to understand is find a purpose. A life without a purpose is no life at all. So you need to find a purpose. Remind yourself in the morning, why are you waking up in the morning? Remind yourself, why are you going to work? Remind yourself, why are you doing certain things? Again, the purpose can be as selfish as well as like, hey, I want to buy the next car. Sure, fine. It's still a purpose. I did that, you know. I want to go on that trip. It's fine. You know, be selfish like that. It's okay. You know, don't ever think that people will judge you. People will judge you regardless. It doesn't matter. They'll always judge you, but find a purpose. You know, some people have attained that nirvana state where the purposes are much higher. You know, a lot of people listening might still be like, hey, I want to get through school and have good grades. That's okay. That's okay to have a purpose. That's a great purpose to be. And then finally, reach out. There is enough people available in the world which will be happy to coach you, happy to guide you, happy to collaborate with you. Don't be shy, right? Our community has never been shy. And you know, if you feel that you're not getting enough from, you know, 5 people or 10 people, you know, there are another set of 5 people or 10 people that you can reach out to. Don't be shy from reaching out. And specifically around the fintech space, you know, make yourself aware of what's happening around you. Read up on news, read up on stuff that's happening. Try to see what can you do with the technology that is coming. Not everyone can be, I would say, a visionary, but you sometimes don't need to be a visionary to be successful. You can be a close adopter of someone who has visioned something and do really well.
Yeah.
Tesla himself, you know, he is following on the footsteps of some other people who have done something really, really great, but he's super successful. You know, the light bulb was invented by someone who knew that he's just improving on something that was already invented, which was a candle, right? A lamp. The first time he went and showed it to someone, I believe the remarks were, what's the need?
Yeah.
Right. So I think there are some amazing lessons that are there. So don't hesitate to reach out. Technology is changing every day. So if you think you're going to learn something in the next, you know, 1 year, by the time you reach that 1 year, it's going to be obsolete. So that agile, I think that mindset of being agile, what can I learn the next 6 to 12 weeks and apply it? That would be very, very helpful.
Awesome. Yeah, some amazing tips there. And I think education is democratized now. Like, it's available. You just need internet. Like before, you would have we were similar ages. We would have to go to the library to find books and source things and do research. Now it's, hey Google, hey Siri, tell me what this is. It's like it's just there, available at your fingertips. But people don't still realize that, it's the consistency with that as well. It's like it's every day turning up, whether that's 20 minutes in addition to what you're doing in the day, carving out time to stay relevant, learn, keep your tips, keep your skills sharp. And there's no age to it. Like, there's literally no age. I always have this discussion with like elders, right? They're always saying, oh, I'm too old to learn that. I say, hold up, you are sending more WhatsApp messages to me every day with these viral videos and YouTube and stuff. I said, you are using technology even more than me. How can you say you can't learn that? You would have, you would, you're saying you can't learn, but you're engaged in technology. You understand where things are moving. And I can't resonate the point any more important about support. There's enough of us out there who have reached certain stages, excelled in certain areas. And what I find is everybody's happy to help, but you have to be very specific in what you want. What do you need from somebody? It's not just I need a mentor. What do you need a mentor for? How much time commitment do you need? And what are you doing? Are you doing some research? Are you being very specific about what your needs are to show that you've thought about something about your journey and your interests and stuff? And you can have multiple mentors, Like, people get stuck in this rigid thing that I must go down this field, or if I've got this purpose, everything can change. But at least you've got something to aim for, and you reach out to people, things will start connecting. And like your life journey has shown us, you've seen the things, your intention, your experiences all embedded in that, where you are now, where you will be in another, year, 2 years. That would also be just as impressive as what you've achieved to date. So yeah, I think it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, and I wish you all the success with the bank, with all the other initiatives. And I'd welcome you back in the future with when things are changed and you into different things. And probably we're talking about the metaverse more realistically, because it's in practice, or some of these technologies will be more day-to-day for us. But it's all,
We'll do our next session in the metaverse and invite people. How
yeah.
about
Someone's done a podcast in the metaverse already, and I was like, damn it, I missed that boat.
you could be the first Sikh podcast in the metaverse. I'll join. I'll definitely join for sure. Happy to support as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm gonna definitely be investing in some virtual reality equipment. And actually, there's a person I'm trying to reach out to who's a Sikh, who's working in the virtual space as a startup, but he's doing really interesting stuff in there. So I'm trying to get him on the show as well, just to show the practical impact, what that is and what it means to people, and what it means that everybody can contribute to this thing and be part of it. I think that's the biggest thing. And I think, big kudos to you for reaching out for collaborations and being part of that. So anybody listening to the podcast is interested, get in touch with me or Harvey directly. And if you need, a further ask to other people to join in to make it a team effort, I'll do the best I can to get the word out there and to get these initiatives going, because it's
My LinkedIn is always open. So if you guys, anybody wants to reach out to me and talk, LinkedIn is always one of the methods. I recently started a Twitter, my Twitter journey as well.
Okay.
It's Harvir underscore Singh underscore. I was just late to the game, so I just didn't get Harvir Singh. So it's Harvir underscore Singh underscore, and my picture is there. It says Western Union. If you guys want to follow me on Twitter and talk about, have interesting topics to talk about, let's chat on Twitter. Or let's chat on Facebook, not Facebook, but on LinkedIn. I'm unfortunately not on Facebook these days. I just, it was just taking away too much time of mine, so I kind of switched off of it.
You kind of got to choose your platforms wisely, don't you? Otherwise, it's just too much going on. So, are you on Instagram as well, did you say?
I
Or
am on Instagram. Yes, it's a funny name that I have. It's called When Harry Met Spicy, because it's like, I try to be a COVID chef, if you will. I enjoy cooking, and I just put a name called When Harry Met Spicy. But got so busy with work, you know, after the first 15 recipes, I'm like, okay, fine, I need to find some real work to do. But I do enjoy food and I do enjoy cooking, and that's why Mr. Foja Singh called me fat, so that's fine. But I enjoy that. I live in Vancouver right now. Vancouver has amazing, amazing food. Two places in the world, you know, you can never go wrong is the UK and Vancouver, Canada. Amazing Indian food.
Awesome. Brilliant. Well, yeah, I'll put all those places that people can contact you in the episode details and links to any other areas you want to share, so that people can connect and see sort of what you're working on and some of the places you've been appeared on these magazine covers. So the new magazine that you said you were going to be on, do send the link to that and I'll share that as well so that the listeners.
There's one opportunity that is coming up and I don't know how many people would be interested in this. So last year, I was one of the presenters at the Mark Cuban Foundation. And if people don't know, Mark Cuban is one of the tech billionaires that, you know, resides in Dallas. And he has a foundation. He owns the Dallas Mavericks basketball team as well. He does a lot of interesting work. And he has a foundation called Open. It's basically Mark Cuban Foundation that supports AI education, artificial intelligence. And I was one of the speakers last year. But this year, I'm actually hosting them in Denver. I am one of the host cities.
Wow.
And there will be kids from local schools that will be participating in those boot camps. You know, again, people who are listening and who may be in Denver or you have friends and family who would want to attend those sessions and would love to, you know, come out to my office and, you know, hang out with me there to work on a real life use case. It's one of the, you know, amazing networks you've built through that network. So it's an open invitation. Anybody wants to sign up, look at Mark Cuban Foundation and look at Denver as a city. I'll be hosting that this year.
Wow, amazing. Sounds awesome. So yeah, people should take advantage of that if you're in Denver or if you're going to be in the area. Just do definitely reach out. And it's all about AI. We didn't even talk about AI and robotics and stuff. That would just be another couple of hours, I think. But we'll probably leave that for another day. But yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, Harvir, and I welcome you in the future as well. And we'll keep in touch. So I wish you a great afternoon, rest of the afternoon in Vancouver. But we'll keep in touch and speak to you soon.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.